What's going on?
Hey, hey, USA, what's going on? Welcome to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, setting the scene each and every week to help you guys find out what's happening in TV, movies, music, sports, the arts, and everything in between. We're so proud to be syndicated on stations coast to coast and originating right here in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia's number one talk radio station, Talk 860 WWDB. And you can always get insider access and go behind the scene on our show's official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And it's summertime. It's getting hot out there, and it's hot in here because I'm here with my incredible producer, Matt Menarek. Hi, Matt.
Oh, it's hot in here.
It's getting hot in here. I do have to pay royalties now to Nelly.
Nah, you didn't finish the song. You're good.
I can do like a certain amount of bars, I think.
I think so.
I think we're good. But it is. It's getting really hot outside.
It is.
I don't like this time of year.
It's the humidity, I think. I could deal with
it's
the heat a little bit, but when it's humid, when you're sweating, when you get out of the shower and you're still sweating.
And you need another shower because you stepped out of the shower.
Yeah,
because
the humidity, that's horrible.
Yes.
I could deal with dry heat, whatever, but humidity, no way.
Yeah, I'll tell you, a lot of people, they're doing the, we just finished 4th of July. People are traveling. They're going all over the place. And you know, it's that stupid time of year for the beach.
I'm not a fan of the beach.
Okay, good, because then we can be friends then. Because
Okay, cool.
I can't stand the beach. I'm gonna get letters or again emails. I get letters all the time, probably now, but I just hate the beach. I hate it. Everything about it. Hate it.
I like the boardwalk and all that stuff, but the beach itself.
Yeah.
People find it relaxing. I can't sit in the sand. I can't just sit there and do nothing.
Nope.
I always have to be moving. I always have to be doing something.
Me too.
So I understand why people like it.
Yeah.
Because it can be relaxing, but I just,
All right, so tell me then. Okay. Riddle me this then. What is more relaxing? Sitting in grainy sand that hurts when you walk on it and it gets stuck everywhere in places you don't even want to mention? Or is it the fact that they have these weird bugs, especially on the Jersey side, because that's where we're near Philadelphia. They get these weird, like, fly bugs that bite you. Oh, that's real relaxing. Then you get a lot of people, you know, because Jersey, I love Jersey, but Jersey sometimes got some weird looking people there. And they're wearing their thongs and their Speedos and stuff, and you got to stare at that. And that's not very relaxing for me.
No.
And, of course, I am, for people that don't know, I am about as albino as a human being can be. And you just... I look at the sun and I turn like, you know, a lobster. So none of that is relaxing.
No, I understand that. Yeah, there are some
and
people.
And the crowds, to get there, the car travel, to drive to these areas. You got to wait 2 hours in you know, gridlock traffic to get to the stupid place.
Yeah, you sit in a car for hours just to go sit on the dirt.
To sit in the dirt
for hours.
To clean it out for days later out of crevices and problem areas. It's awful. It's just awful.
Yeah, you find it for weeks.
It's
you
awful.
You could go to the beach for
awful.
10 minutes, but you'll find sand for,
awful.
You know, 10 weeks.
I did a photo shoot years ago, bikini photo shoot, when I used to be a model in a former life. And I remember having contacts, and I took the contacts out. Everything was great. And then, you know, a month or two later, I had to put the contacts in for a shoot. It had a grain of sand in there, God darn it. And I'll tell you what, I had my cornea scratched. I had to go to the hospital.
Yeah, that'll do it. One grain of sand. That'll screw you up.
That was
in
like putting a, just stabbing me with like a butcher knife right in the freaking eye. It hurts so bad. And I'll tell you that, you know, I guess PTSD, I don't want to go to the beach.
No beach.
You know, life is not a beach. Is that what they say? Or life is a beach? I don't know. What's the phrase?
I think life's a beach. Yeah.
Well, you know,
because
what? I phrase that differently.
It's a play on the word.
I was just going to say,
that,
you have a different pronunciation of what I say life is.
Yeah, life's a beach.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you see stickers on cars that say that, I think.
Yeah, and I say the other one with a different kind of vowel. Yeah, but, you know, I don't think today's show is going to be a beach.
No.
No, today's a good show. We got a really good show coming, and
yes.
It has no hot sand or crowds or flies or burning involved at all, I don't believe.
No, just good music.
Just good music, and that's good. That's relaxing.
Absolutely.
You
Especially
know?
His music.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love him. We had him on last year.
Yeah.
And this is my first repeat guest that we've had on since I started The Scene with Doreen. So this is exciting to have a round two.
I look forward to it.
Yes, he's got so much going on that we had to.
He
had
does.
To. So just you sit back, audience, because wait till you hear this. Last year, I had the honor of chatting with platinum-selling, Grammy-nominated songwriter and performer John Androsik, also known by his stage name Five for Fighting. A billion streams and counting, John has rightfully earned his place as a top 10 adult contemporary artist for the 2000s, having penned memorable hits like Superman, 100 Years, The Riddle, World, and Heaven Knows. Take a listen.
Got 100 years to live. History starts now.
Exploding on the scene in 2001 with his mega hit, Superman, It Ain't Easy, John's boundless creativity has evolved from not only creating chart-topping songs, but writing music that can help promote a much-needed dialogue and a better world for all. John is heading out on tour this summer with his full band, performing over two decades of his chart-topping hits, and in the fall, he will be performing in select cities in the Northeast, accompanied by his string quartet. John has said there has been a tradition of musicians speaking truth to power. And through his lyricism, musicality, and conviction, Five for Fighting's John Androsik is really a true life Superman. I'm honored to have him with me on the show again today to peel back even more layers of the creative onion, so to speak. Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen, John. What's going on?
Doreen, great to talk to you again. Boy, that was quite a medley you just played.
I even had more. Like the first time I had you on, I had all the others. Like my personal favorite, which I told you, What If I Do. Yeah. That's still, I said, well, I can't do that again because we really talked about that the last time. So you have so many others. And I didn't even get Chances, which is another amazing hit by you. I mean, there's so many. It's crazy.
Well, I've been very blessed to live my childhood passion. So yeah, What If... What If was a fun one too. That was our last single. So, they all have special places in my heart, you know. It's especially Superman, of course, my firstborn.
Yes, yes. I've always said that it's like children. You do that. You conceive them, you raise them, you put them out into the world, and you hope they do you proud. And they did do you proud. They really did.
They're good kids.
They're good kids. Do they visit? Do they call often?
Oh, about 200 days a year when I sing to them.
Oh, so you do lullabies still. That's good. I can't believe it was almost exactly a year ago that we were sitting on your tour bus in Philadelphia chatting about your concert that you were going to be doing at the Met that night. Oh, that's crazy.
Bare Naked Ladies. That was quite a fun tour.
That was
a great night. And it's always special to play Philly, you know, as one of our kind of founding markets for Five for Fighting, and also the whole sports connection with Five for Fighting and everything. It's in many ways, it's our second home.
It is. We've embraced you, even though, you know, you got the Kings and all that. We, you know, the Flyers fans have embraced you. It's okay. We forgive you.
Oh, we trade players back and forth all the time.
All the time. Interchangeable. It's fine.
We're Flyers West. That's all we are. Flyers West.
You know, I wanted to say, because I really didn't get a chance to go over this with you after, because we talked before. What a show. And, you know, when I go to a concert, I tend to look at the crowd and I tend to look at the people's faces. And it's not often, especially at a pop concert, that you see genuine tears on people's faces. And I looked around and people were sobbing, crying, especially during Can One Man Save the World, which we're going to talk more about later. But unbelievable. I got goosebumps even just talking about it now, reliving that moment, how people were so touched with your music.
Oh, thank you so much. No, it's, you know, we try to put on a show that crosses all aspects of life. And, you know, certainly certain songs have certain poignancy with people. And then hopefully, you know, there's a few laughs and a few screams along the way of joy. And but I do have to give credit to the Bare Naked Ladies. They're just a wonderful people, wonderful band. And for me, that was my favorite tour of my life. You know, I've been doing this for 20 years and it was so much fun. And of course, after the pandemic, too, we're all a little bit more grateful for getting together and sharing that experience.
So true. And you can only say it's your favorite tour so far, because you are now heading out again this summer, and this better be your even more favorite, if that's a word, your favoriter. How's that for songwriting? Your favoriter tour. So you're going back with the full band. You're doing the tour bus tour this year, this summer.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, it looks like we've kind of fell into this cycle where we do string quartet tours, you know, very intimate shows in the spring and in the fall. And then in the summers, we go out and do the rock shows, which is so fun. It keeps it fresh. My musicians are my family, my second family. And it's just great. And we're very excited. And as I said, it's like there's nothing better than going out and have a few people sing your songs back to you and share that experience. And there's always something new as well, you know, so we're very excited to get back out there.
Oh, definitely. And your public is very excited. And I'm sure you are probably getting new fans every single day as well. It's not like, you know, it's always the people that are familiar from day one, from like Superman and all these times. You're getting new fans every day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the nice thing is with social media and all the way you can kind of find music, you know, there are people showing up, their kids showing up that weren't born when I wrote these songs. And and
crazy.
Also, as you mentioned, you know, over the last couple of years, I've had some songs that have impacted in ways I never could have imagined, you know, especially in the last year or two. And,
yes.
And so, yeah, people are finding the music and they're appreciating some of the messages and some of the things we're doing outside of the studio as well.
Yes. And we're going to talk all about that because I have you for the full show, which I'm so excited about. And we're going to talk all about that. But I have this kind of format where I have a guest on and we always start the background, your backstory and all that. But we already did that when I had you on last year. So today I want to go further. I want to go more into your career. We did all that stuff. And if you want to listen, all my listeners, go to thescenewithdoreen.com, check out our previous one, catch up. And now you can, you know, have a part two. But I do want to say happy anniversary. 20 years ago, you released your third studio album, Platinum Certified, The Battle for Everything, which had mega hit 100 years on it.
Thank you. It's just crazy to even think about that, you know. You know, it certainly, in some respects, it seems 20 years. In some respects, it seems 20 minutes, right?
Yes.
But that I think for me, that's probably in my mind my I don't know if my favorite record, but maybe the one I'm most proud of. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly having to follow Superman was a challenge when you have a song like that, and it was a great experience. You know, for the first time in my life, I had a budget, and I took musicians to Mendocino, California, and we kind of lived in a house for a couple months and made a record like people used to, you know, where bands kind of go shelter in place for, you know, for a while and really write and perform and, you know, have conversations and try to create something very special. So it was not only for me a great musical experience, it was a great kind of human experience.
Oh, absolutely. And I know you're a mathematician, because we did talk about that. And UCLA, I believe, too, graduated. So 20 years, that's got, you know, it's a number. And it's a rather large number in the year in the music world. So congrats on that. That's wonderful. And it's still very fresh. I was
Thank
listening last weekend on Pandora. And, of course, I picked the Five for Fighting channel. And, you know, and they're all coming on. And I said, you know, I could hear these today on the radio as fresh. I would hope to hear these, honestly, today on the radio as fresh. That's a different story. But, you know, they really are timeless.
Well, thanks. You know, I think the most satisfying thing for most songwriters, if you talk to them, is it's amazing to have a hit. It's incredible. I wish every songwriter has that experience. But to have songs that stand the test of time. I mean, look, I grew up on the 70s golden age of singer-songwriters. Mm-hmm. And you hear those artists every day, everywhere. Billy Joel, Elton John, go down the list. Queen, mm-hmm. Led Zeppelin, you know, all of those, you know, James Taylor. Mm-hmm. So to have a couple songs that, you know, still you hear in CVS or on the, you know, at the paddleboard court or wherever you may be, you know, that I think is very humbling. And I certainly don't take that for granted.
Are you ever out at a store like a CVS? And, you know, hey, CVS, shout out to you. Do you ever are you like shopping for who knows, like, you know, nasal spray, and you just hear your song come on the air? I mean, how does that make you feel if it happens? What do you do?
I still get like a little chill like I did, you know, 20 some years ago. Aww. You know, often it occurs in the dentist chair. Why that happens, I don't know. Maybe my music is good for removing cavities. I don't know. But but yeah, it's still surreal. And it's, you know, it's especially when it's not 100 Years or Superman, you know, more of a deeper cut or whatever at the airport or whatever. And sometimes you have to listen twice. You go, wait a minute. Wait, is that? Oh,
it takes a second, right? It takes a second to know, oh, that's me. Wait a minute. Now, do you ever tell people? Do you ever go, hey, shh, it's me. Listen.
Yeah, but they don't care.
They don't care.
Like, they look at me like I'm a crazy man.
Well, it depends. You're in LA half of the time, you know. So all you,
that's true.
So
that's
you know
true.
You blend in. You know,
we're all crazy. Yeah.
You're all crazy. So you're a little closer to that 100 now, writing the 100 years. You know, since you wrote it 20 years ago. How do you feel you've changed as an artist over the last two decades?
Well, thanks for bringing that up.
I know, not to ever.
But
you need therapy.
No, you're right. I kind of tell a joke where, yeah, when I wrote 100 years, I was, you know, in the second verse, 33, family on my mind, and, mm-hmm. and now I'm in the bridge.
Yeah,
you know, and one day, pretty soon, I'll be in the vamp.
Yeah,
and then I'll hit that last note.
But, no, don't say that. Oh no. Okay, now I need therapy. Oh my god. We're all, you know, the beauty is we're all a little closer. Every minute that goes by, we're all a little closer. So we're all in that same boat.
Well, and we're all somewhere in that song, you know, which I think why it kind of remains, you know, fresh for everybody. But yeah, certainly I'm a different person than I was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I've had quite amazing experiences. My children are now grown up. We're empty nesters. Mm-hmm. A lot of things I think about every day were not what I was thinking about 20 years ago. And also the path of my career, you know, has changed. I'm not trying to write hit songs. I know that, you know, I've had my time and it's been amazing. And it's, in a sense, it's a little more freeing. It kind of reminds me of when I first started, when I was 16, 17, you know, 20 years old, where I was just writing songs about what mattered to me, what interests me, what scared me, what angered me, mm-hmm. what I loved. And in many ways, it's freeing. It's a kind of sense of freedom. And then to still have the platform of Five for Fighting and these songs that it gives me an outlet to folks. It's an exciting time for me. And also, of course, I do many things outside of music that keep me very busy and with our family. And so it's a good time. It's a good time.
Yes. Yes. And you are definitely riding the wave. And I do, you know, speaking of time, I want to take a little bit of a break because I'm chatting today with the extremely talented singer-songwriter John Androsik, also known by his stage name Five for Fighting. Stay right there, because when we come back from the break, we are going to talk about the song that changed not only John's life, but the entire planet. We'll be right back. Imagine giving the gift of a dream wedding or vow renewal to a couple facing serious or terminal illness. That's what Wish Upon a Wedding does every day. Across the U.S., Wish Upon a Wedding creates unforgettable moments of joy and love by granting wedding and vow renewal wishes during difficult times. We can't do it without your help, though. Visit wishuponawedding.org and click the donate link to make a one-time or monthly gift to this amazing charity. Your support makes a world of difference. That's wishuponawedding.org. Because love and hope deserve to be celebrated.
No more mold, no more damage, no more outdated old bathroom, no more slipping and hurting, no more stress. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. Be stress-free. Call 800-827-4067. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. Ask about our military and senior discounts. Your dream bathroom in as little as one day. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a Neverclear glass treated door. Call now for free premium color upgrades. 800-827-4067. Call BCI Bath and Shower, the leader in bathroom remodeling. Be smart, safe, and stay a step ahead of inflation with our interest-free financing options. Call 800-827-4067. Love your bathroom with free upgrades. Call 800-827-4067. 800-827-4067.
Wish that I could cry, fall upon my knees, find a way to lie, but a home I'll never see. It may sound absurd, don't be naive. Even heroes have the right to bleed. Or maybe disturb, won't you concede? Even heroes have the right to dream. And it's not easy to be me. Up, up and crazy or anything. I can't stand the fact I'm not that naive. Men were meant to ride with clouds between their knees. I'm only a man, a funny red sheet, digging for kryptonite on this one way. On a red sheet, looking for special things inside of me, inside of me, inside of me, inside of me, inside of me. I'm only a man in a funny red sheet, only a man looking for a dream. Only a man in a funny red sheet. It's not easy. No, it's not easy to be me.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and you just heard a live acoustic version of my guest today, Five for Fighting's John Androsic. That was a live acoustic clip of his song Superman, It's Not Easy, the song that defined the spirit and the resilience of the American people during a time that was unfathomable. John, Superman said, it's about what you do. It's about action. And you've always been someone who jumps to action to provide the healing power of music when people need it the most. Superman is the perfect example of how a song could heal and become the anthem of September 11th for those that needed hope. And as we approach now the 23rd anniversary of September 11th, for most of us, that experience, that tragedy, that we experienced it firsthand. Our lives were forever changed. How did your life change that day?
Wow. Well, I was actually in London on 9/11, and you know, saw the first plane hit the towers, and like everybody was kind of in shock. Then when the second one hit, like we all knew we were under attack. And of course, I started calling everybody I knew in New York City, and you could not get through. And everybody's kind of panicking, and you see the images of the towers collapsing and people walking across the bridges, and you just can't imagine this is happening. And then in the aftermath, you know, people, you know, forget there were no flights for almost 2 weeks. I mean, there were no planes in the sky. And so I kind of sat in my hotel room and cried and was angry and like everybody else. And I remember finally I got a plane back to Chicago. And I'll never forget. I was so grateful to the pilot because everybody was nervous to get in an airplane. He said, "Hey, I know everybody's, you know, a little uneasy, but I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you home." And I was so grateful to that. And we landed in Chicago. I actually kissed the tarmac when I landed. But I wasn't aware of the fact that many in the media, the television stations, the news outlets have been kind of using Superman to intercut with the heroes of 9/11, the firefighters that ran into the buildings. And that was pretty overwhelming for a relatively young songwriter who just gotten used to hearing his song on the radio. Very quickly, it became a song that recognized the heroes of 9/11, especially in New York City. And there was concerts that people were trying to put on, and very few people wanted to travel. And I'm like, I'm anywhere you want me, I'm there. Mm-hmm. And so I started going, doing some concerts. And then, of course, Paul McCartney had the idea of the concert for New York. And I was asked to do that. And that was probably the most significant, humbling experience of my life, singing for 20,000 people at Madison Square Garden, most of them who'd been down at Ground Zero, digging through the rubble. And as you mentioned, it was transformative for me because that night I really saw that music's not about, you know, fame, fortune, hit songs, record sales, you know, ticket sales. Every once in a while, music can transcend. And it wasn't my performance that kind of educated me. It was The Who, when The Who came on and they blew the roof off Madison Square Garden and everybody was singing and crying and, you know, screaming. And you just saw the release that these people had not had a chance to do. And music gave them that release and that cathartic kind of moment. And I think from then on, my life and my viewpoint of what is music about changed.
Mm-hmm. Now, does it ever, I don't want to say bother you, because that's not the right word, but that's the only one I can think of, that your song was embraced as a beacon of hope for so many during this time, but also on a double-edged sword, that its legacy is now forever linked to such a horrific tragedy?
You know, it's certainly a something where you never would want that to happen.
Right.
Superman was becoming kind of a worldwide hit. It'd been, you know, number one in many countries and was growing into a song. Who knows what would have happened with the song if 9/11 never occurred. But I also feel very grateful that there were songs like that. It wasn't just Superman. There were a couple other songs that kind of provided America a reflection, some solace, something to sing. So I'm glad songs like that were there. Mm-hmm. The fact that it was my song is still kind of hard to put my head around 25 years later. Yeah. But you know, even now, you know, every September 11th or around there, I'll sing Superman somewhere.
Right.
And it still has that kind of effect, and it's still a reminder. And I think music is really important. When we hear songs, you know, I could argue that we've forgotten many of the lessons of 9/11.
Yes.
That got us there. And, you know, when people do hear Superman and it takes them back to that time when the country was together and we were able to, you know, join shoulder to shoulder and fight this terrible enemy and have a understanding of good and evil and what America's really about. And so I think... I think that's a good thing. And the fact that it was my little song that I wrote in an hour in my house, never expecting anyone to hear, that's just unfathomable to me. But here we are, and I'm glad it had that impact.
I'm very glad too. And you've said that that's a song you probably couldn't have written today.
No, yeah. I mean, look, it's not easy to be me. When you think about a young songwriter hitting the wall of the music business, being passed on over and over and over again, mm-hmm. you understand why a young person could write that song. But certainly in the last, 25 years, meeting folks with real challenges, working with Gold Star families, ALS families, certainly our troops, with Gary Sinise Foundation. It's pretty easy to be me. It's pretty easy to be most of us. Of course, we have our challenges and our problems. Life is not always easy, but we do live in the greatest country that's ever existed on the planet. And we have a lot of opportunity, and I have a great family and wonderful kids. So yeah, I couldn't write Superman today because it's pretty easy to be me, but I understand why that young guy, years ago, felt that it was tough, and he just wanted to be heard.
Yes. I've also heard that that's what you said, that as a songwriter, it wasn't about fame or fortune. You just wanted to be heard. That was all you really wanted.
I think most artists feel that way, whether you're a writer or a songwriter or an artist. You just want the chance for people to hear, see what you're doing, mm-hmm. and how you express yourself. And if they like it, great. If they don't like it, great. But just to know that what you're doing has an audience and people can respond to it. And certainly, the arts it's not a meritocracy. It's not like sports. if you're Joel Embiid, you're going to play in the NBA, right?
Yes, yes.
But still, I think, and also, a lot of what you write is you're kind of screaming to be heard. You're talking about things inside you that you want to get out. And so for me, I was, again, I'm very blessed to have that chance to be heard and to have songs that, that people know and that people sing and whether they like them or not. I have some recent songs that some people don't like a lot. They're very angry about my songs, but that's part of it too. You want to have a voice in the culture and have a seat at the table.
Well, there's a difference between making commercial music that you sell and put on the radio, and then there's a other thing that's called the art of the music, where you want to touch people, good or bad. You want to make a difference in their lives or make them think. And I've always said, good art makes people think. So you are doing your job. You are creating art.
No, yeah, I think to have an emotional reaction. I think the worst thing an artist can experience is apathy.
Mm-hmm. They should just give up. It's done. Yeah, if that's what they get, it's done.
if people just kind of ignore you, or you're like, But yeah, if you provoke an emotional reaction, you're probably doing something right. You're probably touching somebody in some way, and you're probably furthering a conversation. Yeah. So I think, and again, you mentioned very early in the show today about, protest songs of the 60s and songs that made a difference in the culture. They weren't just hit songs you listen to and, that's nice. Yeah. They had a message. They had a social message. They had a point of view. And I think that's why music can be so powerful and historically a unique medium where you listen back to the music of a times and you get a sense of that time in ways no other medium can. And I think that applies even today. And it may be the songs that are not being written and the things people are not saying that is as important as maybe some of the songs that are talking about the world we live in.
Yes. And we do throw the word hero around too often, in my opinion. And I do believe it's lost a lot of its meaning. So I want to know, because you help so many of those. You've become one to so many. What does the word hero mean to you?
I know. Well, that's a good question.
I got to give you one in every interview.
I've met so many. The great thing about having a couple songs people know is that I can shine the spotlight on real heroes, heroes that people would never know their names. Many of them are some of our soldiers, Green Berets, people who were in Afghanistan rescuing allies and Americans, wading through sewers every day. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you're not even allowed to know their name. Heroes like my friend Augie Nieto, who had ALS for almost 20 years, who formed a foundation to attack ALS. people like that. Sarah Varado, a woman who runs Save Our Allies, who does such incredible work around the world. So the blessing of my career is meeting real heroes. And but I also think it's heroic to stand up against the tide, to stand up and put yourself at risk to say something that needs to be said.
Yes.
Not that I'm always right or anybody's, but to stand up against the tide and to write or say something that you feel is important, knowing that there'll be a backlash. So I think you can define, you know, hero in many different ways.
Yes. And I don't know if there is one answer. I think it's one of those questions that it's going to be different from every single person that you ask. And yours was wonderful. I love your answer. And on that answer, on that note, I want to take a small break. I'm chatting with Five for Fighting John's John Androsik. And when we return, we're going to talk about John's evolution, not only as a musical artist, but becoming the voice of change for so many that need their voices to be heard. Stick around. We'll be right back. Are you or someone you love facing a serious or terminal illness? Since 2009, Wish Upon a Wedding has been here to help grant your dream wedding or vow renewal. A nationwide charity, we are dedicated to creating an unforgettable day of love and hope for couples during this most difficult time. If you're ready to celebrate love but need a little help, visit wishuponawedding.org and apply. Let us bring joy and magic to your special love story. That's wishuponawedding.org. Apply now and let love shine through.
Tired of shopping for furniture and not finding what you want? Concerned about quality, value, or reputation of most online stores? GrossmanFurniture.com is your answer. We've been furnishing homes for 95 years, and we continue to offer our customers the best price every day, guaranteed. We specialize in customizing over 200 leading brands of furniture to fit your style, your home, and your budget. See why we've been the go-to furniture choice in historic Philadelphia for almost a century. Shipping nationwide, coast to coast, our virtual GrossmanFurniture.com showroom makes it easy and comfortable for you to shop online for quality furniture and decor. Check out our exclusive Made in America furniture lines. Visit us online today and allow us to help you make your dream house your dream home. Log on at GrossmanFurniture.com. That's GrossmanFurniture.com.
Evil's on the march, evil's on the march. Time to face the task at hand. Evil's on the march, evil's on the march. Need every good woman, every good
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and you just heard a clip from the latest release, Okay, We Are Not Okay, by my guest today, John Androsik, better known as Five for Fighting. Wall Street Journal has called him the lone voice of Israel, and many have applauded his bravery for releasing this single and heart-wrenching music video. John, isn't it a shame that I have to use the word bravery when it when did it become brave to speak out against the atrocities that happened on October 7th, 2023?
Well, I think you just said one reason why we're not okay. It shouldn't be hard to condemn brutal terrorists who rape and pillage and kill babies in front of their parents and call for extermination of an entire group of people. I don't know how we've got here, but particularly in the arts, that to me is the most depressing personally. You like to think of the arts and the music community as someone who's had a history of standing up for good versus evil. You look at Live Aid, you look at Sun City, you look at the Concert for New York. But as you said, the fact that the music industry has been so silent on October 7th, including Jewish artists, is a historical disgrace.
And it's not even the first time that you have been motivated to speak out against humanity. When I had you on the show last year, we were talking about your release of Can One Man Save the World? And that's your tribute honoring the Ukrainian people and the mass slaughter at the hands of Putin. And if we look now how that has aged over the last year, we're sort of in the same boat there too.
Yeah, you know, none of these songs I take any pleasure writing. It actually started for me with Afghanistan. You know, Afghanistan, the withdrawal. To me, all these songs, they're not political messages. They're moral messages. And when I wrote Blood on My Hands, which was the song critical of the Afghan withdrawal, it became a voice for many of our veterans. You know, the honor of my career has been performing and meeting and supporting our veterans and military families. And after the withdrawal, our veterans were gutted. We literally abandoned their brothers in arms who we promised to protect to the Taliban. And it became a voice for so many of our veterans who in many cases were suicidal, just gutted. And after writing Blood on My Hands, I kind of, maybe it was a change in direction. I certainly had no intention of writing another one. I hoped I never had to write another one, but seeing how that provided a voice for those who needed it and became an important song within the culture and in the media. And of course, some media embraced me, some media shunned me. And then with Can One Man Save the World, you know, writing about the fortitude of the Ukrainian people, going to Kyiv, performing with the Ukrainian orchestra, you know, standing in the rubble of a blown up airport in front of their symbol of independence, the Maria, the airplane, you know, to have that experience and literally, you know, speak to people through interpreters who've lost family members, who had people missing, who are in the middle of fighting for their survival. Those things kind of change you. And I think it certainly gave me energy and kind of freedom and understanding that whatever backlash I may get from these songs is so trivial compared to what people are suffering. And when I put out the OK video and Israel shared it on their social media, you know, I found out very quickly, you know, in a very small way, what it's like to be Jewish in the world today. I'm not Jewish. You don't have, in my mind, you don't have to be Jewish to condemn Hamas. You just have to be sane and human and have a heart. And, but to see the vitriol and the threats and that came back at me through the release of that song, it really made me understand what our Jewish neighbors, our fellow Americans and Jewish people around the world experience every day. So it's been, it's been surreal, but it's something that I'm proud to be doing.
Yes, and you were there. You flew over to Tel Aviv. You performed in front of the people who embraced you. I think you also performed Superman as well, correct? To both, you did both for them that day. And then, was it Iran that bombed only hours later?
Talk about a surreal story, Doreen. You know,
I mean look, little thing, right? Yeah.
I mean, since the song's come out, it has been embraced because so many Jewish people around the world and in America feel abandoned on the college campuses, of course. And that's because they have been.
Yes.
It's been a massive, complete disgrace, especially at our academia and the Rashida Tlaibs of the world. And so I was asked many times, you know, will you come to Israel? Will you come to Israel? And I had 6 days break on one of my quartet tours, and I decided, let's go. And initially we were going to meet with hostage families, which we did, which is, there's no words for that. And we met with IDF soldiers, and we were visiting some artists, but I was asked at the last minute to perform at Hashid Square on their Saturday night weekly broadcast. Every Saturday in Tel Aviv, they have a stage and hostage families speak and thousands of people come. It's broadcast to the whole country. Mm-hmm. Sometimes artists play. And as you said, Doreen, I'd never heard an announcement before a show that was, in event of missile attack, everybody please take cover, cover your heads and seek shelter. Mm. And here's the thing about Israelis. Nobody left. Not one person left. I was ready to run to my, you know, my hotel and hide under my bed, but nobody left.
Right.
And I walked out, and we've talked a lot about on the show today about the concert for New York. And to me, this is the closest thing that I'll ever come to that, because you walk out on a stage and literally right in front of you are family members with signs of their loved ones in tears. It reminded me of walking down 7th Avenue after 9/11, seeing the posters, and in Madison Square Garden, looking out and seeing the family members in tears. And it was kind of a flashback to that. But to play Superman, and then I said a few words, and then to play OK for those people was, again, just incredibly humbling, and you see why you do what you do, and you see the effect it has. And I walked off stage and was, you know, hugging some family members and hostage families, and the head of the hostage forum said, by the way, John, you need to be in your hotel room in a safe room by 11 o'clock. And I'm like, okay. And I went to my entourage of Israeli folks and some American Jewish folks, and I said, this tells you all you need to know about Israelis and the Jewish kind of fortitude. I said, all right, you guys, we need to go to the hotel. They're closing the airspace. It was about 8:30, and we have to be in our room by 11. And one of the guys said, but John, we have a dinner reservation.
I shouldn't laugh, but that, yes, well, you're right.
I kind of laughed, you know, I'm like, ha, let's go. He goes, no, John, I've waited 2 weeks for this dinner reservation. And that's just who these people are. They're a little crazy.
Yeah.
But they've been through it their whole lives, and they do not let dark times take away their capacity for joy
and good meals. They do not let it take it away. Yes.
Eventually we compromised, and we had dinner at the hotel, but yeah, at 11 o'clock, literally on the dot, that's when Iran launched their attack on Israel. And for me, of course, it was scary and trying, but I had my son with me. My son went over with me, and of course, my wife was very upset, and we were scared, but we kind of rode through that. And then, you know, we're up all night, and the next day you kind of wake up and everybody's going to work and they're at the beach, and it's like that would not happen in America, Doreen.
No.
But it was surreal. But I'm very glad I was there to experience that with them and really understand the threat they're under and what they've frankly been dealing with for thousands of years.
Yes. And, you know, many times you've created music and gone into the heart of Ground Zero to honor and inspire. You know, we're talking now September 11th. We've talked about Ukraine. We've talked about Israel now. And you still don't want to call yourself a Superman. Because I'll tell you what, I got news for you, my friend. You are Superman for so many of these people who you've helped heal through your music. You are.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate that. Again, I think the ability to use music to shine the light on social issues. And I do think we're at a tipping point in the world. You know, to me, as I said, these are moral messages. And okay, even though on the surface it seems like it's about Israel, Hamas, Palestine, it's really not. It's about civilization versus those who want to tear it down. Mm-hmm. In the video, I have Iran right next to Putin, right next to Xi of China, right next to Hamas. And I worry, frankly, that Taiwan is next.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, you know, these are critical, critical times in history. And I think America, when you have a weak America, these events happen because evil actors feel emboldened.
Yes.
So for me, you know, I'm not a politician. I'm not a, can't fly a F-16, but I can write songs that at least you'll get one person's opinion on what's going on. And I hope I never have to write another one. I fear that's probably a little naive, but to see what Blood on My Hands and Can One Man Save the World and okay, mm-hmm. How they've impacted, it gives me, you know, energy to continue speaking up and because so many people feel voiceless.
I mean, I love you, but I don't want to see you next year talking about this. I want to talk about other things next year. We can talk about something else, like, you know, maybe something with musical theater. I'm just saying, because I want to take a little bit of a break, and then we're just come back and wrap everything up. I'm chatting with Five for Fighting John Androsic, and we will return. We're going to talk about his upcoming summer and fall tour and everything else this platinum-selling Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter has on tap next. Stick around. We'll be right back. Imagine giving the gift of a dream wedding or vow renewal to a couple facing serious or terminal illness. That's what Wish Upon a Wedding does every day. Across the U.S., Wish Upon a Wedding creates unforgettable moments of joy and love by granting wedding and vow renewal wishes during difficult times. We can't do it without your help, though. Visit wishuponawedding.org and click the donate link to make a one-time or monthly gift to this amazing charity. Your support makes a world of difference. That's wishuponawedding.org. Because love and hope deserve to be celebrated.
A careless driver can change your life in an instant. Do you know what to do or who to call? If you've been injured in a motor vehicle accident and do not have an attorney, call Auto Accident Help Desk for a free consultation. We can answer all of your questions and estimate the potential value of your case. Call Auto Accident Help Desk and connect with an expert personal injury attorney.
Call 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428.
Don't worry how to handle your medical bills, lost wages, and pain. We will get you the money you deserve.
They got me way more than the insurance company offered.
The consultation is free, and you do not pay any legal fees unless we win or settle your case. Make the smart call. If you've been injured in an auto accident, call Auto Accident Help Desk for a free legal consultation.
Call 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428.
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and I've been chatting all hour with the incredibly talented John Androsic, better known as Five for Fighting. That was a clip from the title track off of his fifth studio album, Slice. Welcome back, John. I wanted to mention last time you were on the air, but we never got to it. You co-wrote two songs off that album with musical theater royalty composer Stephen Schwartz. For those that don't know who that is, Wicked, Pippin, and Godspell. I mean, how did that collaboration come to be?
That was surreal because as a very young boy at the piano, I would play Godspell songbook. And of course, Stephen and Alan Menken had collaborated on many movies. And the way it came together was they actually wanted me to sing a song for Enchanted that they wrote. And I was actually working on a movie called August Rush. So I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. But we always said, I said, Stephen, you know, look, I'm a massive fan. If you're ever in LA, let's get together. And we did.
Yeah.
And we actually met at a little restaurant and we were chatting about music and talking about songs. And we were kind of talking about how everything seems so divided these days, you know, and we were talking about American Pie, and mm-hmm. and when music all, you know, one radio station played all different kinds of music and mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And we kind of, I don't know which one of us said, yeah, it's kind of like a slice of American Pie. And like two songwriters do, we got out the napkin. We got the napkin out, and we started jotting down lines, and we became very good friends, and we are still very good friends. He's an icon. He's a brilliant songwriter. He's a very impressive person. Yeah. Just a wonderful human. And yeah, we wrote Above the Timberline. We wrote Slice, and we actually worked on some other projects together that never kind of saw the light of day. But just to have him in my life and to call him friend is an honor, because he is one of the, as you said, the royalty of musical theater. And again, to kind of pick his brain and sit in the room and write with him was an honor, certainly an honor of my life. And hopefully there's more to come there.
Yes, you know, I've always said you have a very incredible musical theater sensibility to write for the stage. Any plans to maybe pen a musical in your future?
Well, I dabbled. Actually, there was a group that was looking to do some musicals, you know, that I, back in the day, I've been asked not to say which one, but it's a baseball movie that has a dream in it and a feel.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea what you're speaking of.
Yeah. But no, I spent a year working on the Field of Dreams thing. And, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, that for a variety of reasons, never saw the light of day. But it was a great process. I enjoyed sitting in the room. The thing with musicals, they're literally 7-year opportunity cost. It takes you 7 years
absolutely
to stand one up if it happens. But I would love to do that. I love the theater. My daughter's a theater kid. Mm-hmm. I love telling stories. And as Stephen always said, you know, you write the song in the musical when words are not enough.
Yes.
And so I would love to do that. And who knows, you know, if the stars align, maybe you'll see 100 Years the Musical one day.
I love it. And it won't take 100 years to get there. I love it. No, you know, there is a resurgence. And I'm going to just say this. I'm going to go out on the record. I don't care if I alienate people. But Broadway right now is a little bit in a cesspool, in my opinion. Yeah. I think they're regurgitating the same thing with Hollywood. They're, you know, they keep doing the same idea. And people are getting a little tired of it. So to find a really good original new musical, maybe with the power team of Schwartz and Andrasik, and maybe, I'm just saying, I could get on board as a producer for that. I'm just telling you, and I have my Broadway experience. I would like to be part of that. I'm just saying, I want to be part of that.
So do I.
Well, we'll do lunch and we'll pull out the napkin and we'll start making notes. And I think that's like, you know, because you're going to be here. And you're going to be, because we're outside of Philadelphia, you're on tour all over, but you're going to be at the Ardmore Music Hall on August 8th, I believe, or is it the 6th? I don't have it in front of me because I'm like so enamored by you right now. But I know you, all your dates are online. You're also in my hometown of Buffalo, New York at the Electric Factory. I love that. You're hitting two of my big old spots there. So you're all over the place.
Yeah, I think it's the 6th at the Ardmore, and you know, Buffalo Sabre fans were coming to see you. And
yeah,
it's awesome. You know, we're here, there, everywhere. You know, Doreen, you're so wonderful. You know, your beautiful voice is only eclipsed by your intellect. I mean, it's always great to talk to you. And,
thank you.
And you know, you're always on the guest list, and I hope folks come out. It's a family show, you know, so don't be afraid to bring the kids and the grandparents. And as mentioned, all the dates are at fiveforfighting.com.
That's it. You beat me to it. So, you know, you're out on tour now. You got your full band. You're back on the bus, so to speak. And I do. I highly recommend. You're not just, like you said, you know, you paid me that wonderful compliment. It's my turn to pay it to you. You are not just a wonderful creative soul. You are just a wonderfully creative, kind person. And you are so... I don't even know. You made me you teared me up a little bit during this interview, and I want to thank you for that, because no one does that. So thank you.
You're welcome. Well, let's not wait another year for the next time.
Please, and no more. Hopefully no more. We're going to work on,
No more.
We're going to do a different thing. Musical theater. That's our next goal. Okay, so next year we're going to be talking about that, I think.
Let's do it.
All right. Fiveforfighting.com, John Androsik. You are incredible, and I hope to have you on for a third time.
I look forward to it, Doreen.
All right, thank you. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you to my guest today, Five for Fighting's John Androsik. And thank you again for tuning in to The Scene with Doreen. I'm here each and every week across the country bringing you the best interviews from the entertainment world and beyond. Get connected with me on social media and on our official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And tune in next week so you can find out what's going on. Bye.